Hello, everybody. Welcome to the G22 session. We've got two very nice talks for you coming up. Reminder at the end of the talks, if we have any questions, please go to the microphones because the talks are being recorded. And so when people download the audio, we'd like them to be able to hear the questions as well as the answers. Also, this talk will run until lunch, and lunch will be served in the usual out there and around toward the exhibit hall. So, with no further delay, I'd like to introduce Bill Supernor, who's the CTO of CoolSpan, and he's going to talk about smartphone key stores.
Good morning. I am from CoolSpan. We are a maker of secure voice and messaging applications for mobile devices, including enterprise management and the like. We do a lot with smartphone key stores. So let me see if I can get this thing to... There we go. All right. So I'm going to spend probably the first third of this presentation going over what is a key store, why do we care, and then probably the rest of the presentation going into some details about Android and some details about iPhone. This is an update to a presentation I gave at the last ICMC. I'd like to see a show of hands. How many people were at the last one and saw the same presentation? Okay, maybe about a quarter of you. So there is some new stuff in here, so you won't be completely bored. All right. I got to find the right button here. So what is a key store? On a device, a key store is the place where we're going to keep our various keys. Sometimes it's passwords, sometimes it's symmetric keys, asymmetric keys, and some devices let you put other stuff in there, stuff that you just want to keep secret in a hopefully hardened place. These key stores can be files, they can be databases, they could be external devices such as smart cards or micro SD devices or some other kind of hardware security module that's built into the phone itself. And the mobile environment is particularly of concern, I believe, for key stores when you look back at some of the truisms that that we look at when we think of security. Where physical possession of a device is tantamount to compromise. And on the devices of today, what the manufacturers are trying to do is make it so these key stores can provide that level of protection that is needed to make it so even physical possession isn't enough to compromise the keys. So the things we should be able to do with a key store: of course, we want to be able to add keys to it. We want to be able to take them away. We'd like to be able to export them sometimes, depending upon what our deployment model is. And we'd like to be able to use those crypto keys. And this is one of this last one is one of those places where we see some significant differences between different platforms. Some let you use the keys inside the key store, let you use the keys inside a protected place within the device. Other devices, platforms require you to bring those keys up into application space. And that can make a huge difference in terms of how well defended those keys are at the time you are actually trying to use them in your crypto algorithm. And also some, both Android and iPhone now are able to enforce ACLs or access control lists on the different keys in terms of when you create them and how you can use them and when you can use them, all part of the defense of those keys while they're contained on the device. So the next question, when you're, especially if you're working on multiple different platforms, is how are you going to access those keys? And unfortunately, the APIs are different on every platform. Sure, there are some cross-platform capabilities like PKCS11, but they're just not there. Or if you have a device that can be moved from phone to phone, yes, maybe there's a common API. But Android has its API, iPhone has its API, BlackBerry, Windows, you name it. You have to write your key management and key access code for each device. So the next question is, where is it? It could be on some of the more modern devices in a protected place of the device. Trusted execution environments are very common now. The ARM processor provides the trust zone, and most platforms support the use of trust zone or something even better. On Windows Phone, there's actually a TPM, and on Apple, it's been revealed in the last year that there's actually a dedicated processor for this, even beyond trust zone. And then there's other places where you'd think keys could exist, like inside a SIM card or inside the NFC secure element that's inside a lot of phones these days. But the reality is, on the SIM card side, the carriers really don't want to give up access to those devices. They're under very strict control. And if the platform's going to allow to mess with the SIM card and the user's allowed to mess with the SIM card, it can compromise what security is left within the carrier environment. NFC secure element, the platforms that have that, both Android and iPhone have those. Again, I think it's a question of control. This is where Apple Pay happens. This is where Android Pay or Samsung Pay or whatever the heck your payment method of choice is. This is where they're doing money stuff. And that is not something they're giving developers and third parties access to. Strictly controlled. So how is it going to be protected? How are your keys going to be protected? There's various levels of defenses that you can put in place, defenses that are built into the operating system, and defenses that are built in at the hardware level itself. There's your typical access controls, such as usernames and passwords, PINs, and so on. Fingerprint on a lot of the more modern devices and coming into play these days is iris recognition and some other biometrics. At the hardware level, we're seeing very strong OS secure boot processes in place, integrity checks against the software and hardware to make it so even if a device is rooted or jailbroken, the device is able to detect that that has happened. And maybe it wasn't able to stop a root or jailbreak from happening, but at least it can know when it has happened such that it can prevent access to the critical keys. So those are all things that are in place for that. Now, when we also look at some of the other ACLs that are available, there's a lot of APIs available these days that allow pretty granular control over when you can access the keys. Of course, you don't want anybody to be able to access it except when the device is unlocked, except you, unless you have an application that requires background sync. So it's good if you're able to provide a little bit of visibility there. It would be good if the key store can lock access to the keys after a certain amount of time. I only want to allow access to this key for 5 minutes or 30 seconds after the user swipes their fingerprint. Some keys can be accessible right after boot, and some keys can only be accessible after the first time the user has unlocked the phone. So you don't leave the phone in the taxi, let the battery die, and then somebody can get into it. So all these different ACLs are available now, and then we can also look at who can get at them. Most of our phones are single-user devices. You get into an enterprise environment or a warehouse environment or a hospital environment or places like that, there may be multiple users, and key control can be managed in that way. Then there's also, differing across platforms, can one app see my keys? Can multiple apps see my keys? Can all of the applications on the phone see my keys? And as I dive into the platform differences, you'll see there's differences between the different platforms. And so the platform of choice could sometimes be driven by what's the level of control and access you need to be able to provide. Similarly, on one of the platforms, all the applications from one vendor can share keys. And on another platform, it doesn't matter. Every app is on its own. So how do they compare? Well, it's definitely complicated, either like that or like more like that, them being the most common platforms out there these days. And even within Android or within, to a lesser extent, iPhone, these capabilities vary tremendously. If you look at the Android fragmentation here, the black numbers on the right are as of a couple weeks ago. What's the market share per platform, with the green and red showing the delta from last year. The newest platform as of May seems to be at about 7%, whatever the newest platform is. But then it's 30%, 30%, and everything else. There's a lot of fragmentation, and there's been a lot of changes in Android in terms of how it exposes the key store just in the last 3 or 4 years. And so, you know, while we're going through it, some of them really stink. And the newer ones are getting really good. But if you're deploying out in the real world these days, you've got to be able to deal with them all, unless you're in a position to mandate what phones your users are using. iOS side, it's like pretty much everything Apple does, pretty draconian in terms of what the deployment base is. And this is really good from a couple different perspectives. You look at the Android side, you've got this version fragmentation, and then you also have OEM fragmentation. So yes, you've got consistent APIs across these different versions, but then when you go down deep into the hardware, it's, again, completely different from Sony to Samsung to whomever. And, you know, how secure is my key store? I have a really good idea of how secure it is on Samsung. I have no idea on some of the other platforms. And you get into some of the really lesser known platforms and you have no idea what you're going to find. Again, iOS side, they own it all. And when they share any information at all, it's pretty definitive. And in the last year, they've actually shared a lot more information about how the hardware works down inside. So, sir.
Does Android have a hardware restriction on the where the key store are being stored, especially that it runs on different platforms?
In the most recent version, I'll be showing it in a few slides. In the most recent version, a hardware-backed key store is mandatory.
Okay.
But don't be expecting your older devices to be updated. So, yeah. So, looking at the Android Key Store, the highest level entity we're looking at is, in fact, an object called the Key Store. There is also an entity called a Key Chain. So, a Key Store provides app-isolated access to keys. So, if I have four different apps, each app is on its own in terms of access to keys, unless I make use of the key chain, which is a special instance of the key store, but it has global exposure. So the bad news is, or the good news is I can share the keys across all four of my apps. The bad news is everybody else can too. So it's a little bit of a mixed bag there in terms of the benefit trade-off. Below the key store is an entity called the key master. That is the hardware abstraction layer going down into the device hardware itself. This is where you'll see the OEMs interfacing their own hardware into the Android common source base. Keys within Android are stored in flat files up in Data Miss Key Store. Each user gets their own keys, so if my application is installed on a device with multiple users, each user gets their own key. And then within there, you'll see in the naming convention, there's an app identifier. So that's where they bring in the control where each app gets its own key. And the encryption of these keys, it depends on what version of Android you're on, and we'll get into that a little bit. If you're not using a hardware-backed key store on Android, the keys are encrypted using password-based key derivation function just from your device password. After that, it's anything. Most of them are using ARM Trust Zone-based key stores, using either Qualcomm's QC or the Trustonic T. So looking at the oldest devices, at this point, 52% of the deployed devices on the market. Android J introduced this key store provider, allowed create, import, sign. It gave a flag that let you find out if your key was actually backed by a hardware device, a hardware root of trust. But then they got rid of that a couple versions later. In that version, as of that version and still today, the secure random provider is OpenSSL. And actually on Samsung, they're using Boring SSL, which is a OpenSSL offshoot. Android K, the key store added support for elliptic curve, whereas before it was only RSA. And there's actually a bug in Android K that when you use this particular key derivation function, it was only using the first 8 characters of your password. So if you used a bigger password, or excuse me, it only used the first 8 bits of every character of your password. So if you were using a Unicode password, it ignored all those higher level bits. Android L, not really too much going on there, except that they added support for TLS using AES-GCM. Marshmallow, Android 6, huge changes in the key store. Now the key store supports symmetric keys, has some critical crypto functions that can actually leverage those keys inside the key store without bringing them up into app space. Added a lot of access control methods for specific users, apps, time ranges to control access to the keys. Also added granular key usage restrictions. This key can only be used for encrypt. This key can only be used for decrypt, sign, verify. Lots of different parameters that dictate how the key may actually be employed. And they're actually stored with the key in the protected key storage. And so on can also require authentication on a per key basis. So even if your application has multiple keys, can dictate authentication on a pretty granular basis and stating the duration. Very PKCS11-ish design pattern here in terms of begin, finish, update. I guess that's also like OpenSSL. So this year's model, just now hitting a lot of devices, not a ton of crypto changes per se, but some OS hardening that is relevant to the concerns about key stores. Verified boot is a mandatory part of the operating system that it will try to detect if the device has been compromised and certainly deny access to the key store if it has. Hardware-backed key store of TEE or better is mandatory. And some other interesting little tweaks user and MDM installed root CAs. So certificates that you install are no longer globally trusted. The implication there being they used to be globally trusted. And there are APIs that you actually have to call out inside your application in order to enable that trust. So for military DoD users that deploy big giant piles of government root CAs, things are changing a little bit here. It used to be you'd just be able to dump a gigantic key blob in either manually or via an MDM. Now your apps have to explicitly trust that. And they've got some pretty granular ways of doing that. You can either trust all of them or you can trust a subset. It's cool, but there's definitely some work there. It apparently was an issue where different OEMs were deploying different sets of CAs, root certs, on devices. You know, you couldn't count on a Samsung versus a Sony versus a somebody else to have the same sets of CAs. And in this release, they've said it's mandatory. This is your set. Don't do anything else. And then one little tweak on SHA-1 random number generator being deprecated. And if you call it without explicitly calling out this certain crypto provider, it'll just default to OpenSSL random. Sir?
Can you explain a little more detail what you mean by those two CAs that are trusted? How are they trusted? They are trusted to do what? How does it work?
If, for example, you had an application that was going to connect to an HTTPS server and you were using the APIs provided in Android, it would automatically verify that the SSL certificate chained to a known root of trust. The SSL certificate exposed by the web server, that it would try to make sure that it chained to a known root of trust, like a VeriSign certificate or GoDaddy or something like that. And what they're doing here is if you were using self-signed certificates, or in the case of like the US DoD, which has a massive library of CAs, those are not trusted by all applications on the device by default anymore. It is not directly related to a key store, except insofar that it's a crypto related function. So, sorry if that's confusing. It is not strictly speaking a key store thing, but I thought it was relevant in terms of interest to to this type of audience. Thank you, though. So, some gotchas on the Android side. I mentioned earlier that the Android key store can be protected by the device lock. Certainly, you wouldn't expect the key store in most cases to be exposed when the device is locked, unless you needed it to use it that way. But when you look at some of the older devices, Android J, K, and M, that's the primary mechanism for securing the key store. And if you change the type of lock screen you are using, from password to PIN, or PIN to pattern, or anything like that, your key store is erased. So users happily working along with whatever your application is, has keys deployed, and decides to change to the pattern because that's cool, or change to the fingerprint reader because that's cool, or tired of the long password and switches down to PIN. Your application's keys just got deprovisioned. Or actually, they're still there, but they can't get decrypted. So you have to be really careful with those types of transitions. Make sure your application is resilient. Make sure your application knows that it could be happily working, and then suddenly the keys have gone, and you have to account for that use case where you're going to have to reprovision the keys. Newer versions of Android survive the transitions, most of them. There are still a couple use cases where they will still get wiped. The the links there give a very exhaustive analysis. Sorry? I'd call it a bug. I think it was just a, I think it just showed the evolution of Android. I mean, it grew from a relatively immature platform to a much more mature platform, and they did not account for, I mean, in the older devices, those screen lock types, they were different applications. And they did not allow for the transition between different lock types in terms of decrypting the key store in a safe way and re-encrypting it, or having a key to the keys that could get re-encrypted across that transition. So they've definitely done much better. And then finally, in Android M, this is definitely a bug, there were the ACL rules for private keys were also applied to public keys, which isn't the best thing to do in all cases. And so you just had to make sure you pulled the public keys out of the key store if you needed to access them when the device, when the key store was still locked. This is especially applicable to things like if you had to do a sleep sync, you know, and accessing something while the device was sleeping. All right, so on the iOS side, again, far less fragmentation here. They own the phones, they own the platform. Much more consistent across all the devices. And the iOS keychain can store passwords, keys, certificates, and chunks of information that you just want to hide away and put behind an ACL. Excuse me, on the downside, there, with one exception, if you want to, if your application wants to extract private key matter from the key store, you can. The APIs are there. The keychain is implemented as a database within the operating system, managed by the security daemon, and it exposes a number of really good access control list mechanisms. Defining what can access the key in terms of certain apps or certain apps from the same vendor. So again, if I have four applications, all four could share the same keys if I set the access group appropriately. There's an accessible ACL that defines when the key can be accessed in terms of relative to entry of a password or a fingerprint or whatever. And then also an access control attribute that says, okay, does it have to be a password? Does it have to be a fingerprint? And all in that vein. All those decisions about ACLs are made inside something called the Secure Enclave Processor, or what most folks call the just the Secure Enclave. As of last year's presentation, nobody had any idea what the Secure Enclave was. The prevailing thought in the industry was that it was ARM Trust Zone. And there was, and I'm not sure if the presentation at Black Hat last year resulted in Apple revealing exactly how the Secure Enclave worked. But as of last summer, a lot more details came to light. And in fact, we now know it is a coprocessor, a completely different set of CPU within the main package. And then also, if you dig into iOS and you see something called key bags, that really doesn't have anything to do with how you're going to be able to access keys. Key bags are groupings really more on the Apple side to define what kinds of keys are allowed to go over to iTunes, what can be done over USB, what can be done over the air, what can go up to iCloud. It's really more some database query they do against their keychain to determine what keys are allowed to go where. little bit of detail here on the secure enclave. I don't want to dive too much into it. Suffice to say, it's a distinct processor. It is totally in charge of Touch ID. It is where all the keys are managed for accessing the file system, and it controls the ACLs for the keychain itself. Oh, and this is the one case where there's an unexportable key on iOS. They allow you to generate, store, use non-exportable P256 elliptic curve keys. But if you do this, make sure you, if you make use of this, make sure you pull out your public key and store it yourself, because it is not stored inside the secure enclave. Here's some of those protection attributes I was talking about. I just want to highlight a few of them. So they have this mechanism where a key can be allowed, access can be allowed after the first unlock. And then you see that there's an identical attribute with this device only, a little caveat on there. Basically, it can't go up to iCloud. So take that a different way. There are keys, when you create them, that are going to go up to iCloud. Or there are keys that will go into an iTunes backup, and if restored, will continue to be usable. And then there are those keys that you can say are not going to go on to my next phone. I want to reprovision those. So interesting capability. The default mode here is a key is only accessible when it's unlocked. And then there's another one down here at the bottom, accessible when passcode set. So the key is accessible at any time as long as the device has a passcode. If your device does not have a passcode, you're not going to be able to get at it. And this kind of key is unique in that it is never backed up, whether it's to iTunes over USB or over iCloud. These are a little bit confusing sometimes. Looking at a couple roots of trust here, there is a main root of trust called the UID, or unique identifier. It is actually a 256-bit key. It is set in the silicon of the CPU, and it is pretty fundamental to everything that goes on the device. Then there's also this group ID, which is actually also a key. This is common across all the devices in a processor family. So Apple's A9 processor, they're all going to have a shared GID. And that is what they're using primarily for the firmware encryption, although it is entangled in a number of other places in the whole key chain. This, the UID up there on the top, that is unique per device. This is that fundamental key that Apple says, we don't have any idea what it is, and we can't give it to you even if we wanted to. And then also there's a feature in some of the newer devices called effaceable storage. If you're familiar with some of the issues around NAND flash on phones and your ability to secure erase anything from a phone, there's an issue with NAND flash where it tries to do wear leveling and spread information across the NAND, because each cell in the NAND only has so many electrical cycles it can go through. This is a problem if you're trying to erase a USB key or a phone. And what effaceable storage does is it gives the device the capability to go directly to the place on silicon, on the NAND flash, where the critical, most critical keys are stored, and actually erase those cells, as opposed to erase a block on some pseudo hard drive someplace that may or may not actually touch the silicon. And there's also some stuff in there about the random number generator, but I'm going to skip over that right now in the interest of time. Similar to Android, the APIs on iOS, of course, allow the ability to add, remove, and copy matching allows you to actually export keys. And as I mentioned, the keys actually come up to App Space. So not as cool as I would like for some situations. Within iOS 10, there's actually native support for smart cards and USB tokens. I did some searching around. I don't see that anybody has used this yet, but it'll be interesting to see if somebody can make use of this with some near-field communications and some of our smart cards, and see if it's possible to do some smart card things without needing, you know, cumbersome sleds and the like. Really quick on Touch ID, a couple parameters that can be set around Touch ID. Touch ID current set. That allows you to create a credential, and then if somebody comes along and adds another fingerprint to your device, they will not be able to access those credentials. So current set means I'm going to create this key and only allow it to be accessible by the current set of biometrics. If somebody changes them, not anymore. I thought that was pretty cool. And then finally, there's also this other one down here, that elliptic curve P256 key I mentioned down in the enclave. This allows you to grant access to that as well. So tidbits and gotchas, I already mentioned the iCloud keychain. Can't share keys between apps from different vendors. As we look at what derived credentials could do on the phones with apps from different vendors, this becomes a real pain. There's also some bugs when there's a lot going on the phone can forget how to reach its keys. This memory pressure issue, you can try to go to access a key and it'll say denied with no apparent reason. Can be a pain. And then finally also, if you write something to the keychain and the app goes away, the key's still there, you install the app again, it's still there. So that has implications that if you want to get rid of your keys, you might want to erase them yourself. Touch really quickly on Windows Phone and BlackBerry. Windows Phone, it's like Windows on a good laptop with a TPM. It's virtual smart cards, TPM support, crypto inside the TPM. They did a good job down under for the key store. There's just no market share there, so not sure anybody here is using them. And then BlackBerry 10, it looks cool. It's got a T underneath the key store, but the key store is not really usable by applications. You cannot store keys in the key store. The best you can do is store a password that you then use to encrypt your own key store. FIPS. One change here from last year is last year we weren't really sure if Apple's key store was FIPS. Yeah, we're sure now. And so Windows, Apple, and BlackBerry, all FIPS. Android, depends. Depends on what phone you're on. Samsung, yep. The others? I don't know. And on Samsung, it's only like their flagships. Everything's level one. Everybody's got OpenSSL. Is it in FIPS mode? I have no idea. And there's no way to tell. It's a pain in the butt. And then there are other options available out there if FIPS level one is not available. Certainly you can use smart cards. Tethered, Bluetooth, whatever. And then there are a number of secure micro SD devices out there. My company makes use of a micro SD from a company called GoTrust. It's common criteria, 5+, and FIPS level 3. Good device, but if you want to use it on iPhone, you have to use some plug-in thing that we don't have a lot of customers asking for that. But if you need that highly trusted level of FIPS, it's out there. So some parting thoughts. I think I harped on market fragmentation enough. The different platforms have strengths and weaknesses. I do think the reality of the user environment these days is most applications are forced to support both of the platforms that are really out there today, Android and iPhone. But the different APIs can make that tough. But they're definitely moving in the right direction. If you go and download the presentation, I've got a number of links in here that talk about it, a lot of the different stuff that I've addressed. I'll be around, and you can
catch me. Thank you very much, Bill.
Thank you. Thank you.
Sorry we don't have time for questions, but certainly you can catch him on the way out at lunch. So right now, our next talk